Debug the hive, kick back, clear your mind.
Cash in circulation in Russia jumped by 513 billion rubles in the first half of July alone as people pulled physical cash out of banks. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan, and this show is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Today's date is July 24th, 2026. That cash number is where we start because it's a financial signal that links to strikes, logistics shocks, and real political risk. Microsoft confirmed that Windows now assigns a persistent global device ID to every installation, and there's no user toggle to turn it off. The company says the identifier helped law enforcement tie one suspect to a device in a criminal probe, while privacy advocates warn it can link activity back to an identifiable install. This matters because it's not a browser cookie, it's a system-level marker that can survive updates and be matched across services, and it raises fresh questions about consent and transparency. Expect more policy ping-pong and calls for an opt-out or clearer rules. A new reading of St. Louis Fed data shows 105.8 million Americans were not in the labor force in June, a one-month rise of 832,000 that pushes the total above levels seen in the Great Recession and the pandemic. Prime-age non-participation is striking, with roughly 7 million men aged 25 to 54 and about 3.5 million women neither working nor looking. Labor economist Nicholas Eberstadt warned this rise in long-term detachment, including 23.3 million on long-term illness or disability, is a structural problem for growth and public finances. Expect this to sharpen debates over disability policy, workforce re-engagement programs, and whether benefits design is unintentionally discouraging work.
The White House announced a replacement for an expiring global duty, new tariffs of roughly 10-12.5% on imports from about 60 trading partners, which U.S. TR officials say will cover roughly 99.4% of U.S. trade and are framed as enforcement against goods made with forced labor. U.S. trade officials pitch this as a rights-based pressure tool, but trading partners and many economists warn it will raise consumer costs and risk reciprocal steps. Watch for political blowback in allied capitals and possible legal challenges aiming to tie the measure to statutory limits.
Russia's banks are showing real stress, and the clip of cash piling up gives us a clear chain of cause and effect to track. In July, cash in circulation surged by 513 billion rubles in the first half of the month after a 479 billion ruble rise in June, taking the total increase since February to more than 2.4 trillion rubles. That's not an idle statistic. When people shift deposits into physical notes, banks lose the liquidity they use to lend, settle payments, and finance one another. The central bank has responded with large short-term lending, about 2.099 trillion rubles in repo operations in the first 3 weeks of July, pushing banks' total debt to the regulator to roughly 6.243 trillion rubles. Those are big, visible interventions that signal strain. Two immediate drivers are being flagged. First, a string of Ukrainian long-range attacks on logistics and energy infrastructure has produced intermittent mobile internet shutdowns, which in turn forces many consumers to rely on cash because card and mobile payments briefly stop working. Second, public confidence is visibly sagging. A recent Gallup reading shows 60% of Russians say local conditions are worsening. Put those together and you get a behavioral rush to cash. One economist, Igor Lipsitz, framed it as an imbalance between money returning to banks and money being withdrawn by the public. More technically, banks now face a higher share of troubled loans. Analysts say problem loans have risen above the 10% threshold that IMF methodology treats as indicating significant problems that could take a long time to resolve. Interbank borrowing costs have remained stubbornly above the central bank's policy rate, despite liquidity injections, which suggests banks are distrustful of one another and unwilling to lend freely even after the regulator steps in.
Why this matters beyond balance sheet math?
A chronic shortage of rubles inside the banking system can ripple into everyday life. It undermines tax collection, complicates payroll and benefits distribution, and makes it harder for the government to finance spending without pushing policy rates or controls. Historically, fast moves from deposits into cash can precede capital controls, rationing, or abrupt policy steps that raise political risk. On Reddit's World News thread, many commenters linked the cash rush directly to wartime disruptions, mobile internet cuts, supply shocks, and a sense that the state can't guarantee normal economic functioning, while others debated whether sanctions or domestic mismanagement were the main driver. Both points are relevant. Sanctions restrict external options, but domestic confidence is what turns that restriction into a banking problem. There's also a feed through to the battlefield economy. Take Ukraine's campaign against logistics hubs and refineries. This week, OSINT and Ukrainian forces confirmed strikes that hit major commercial infrastructure, including two huge e-commerce warehouses near St. Petersburg and a sorting center in occupied Crimea. Those hits matter because they do two things at once. They knock out real economic capacity, and they make the war feel immediate to ordinary Russians who rely on online shopping, delivery jobs, and local retail. Wildberries, often called Russia's Amazon, had operations suspended at logistics complexes that are roughly 106,000 and 210,000 square meters, respectively. Analysts estimate Ukraine's wave of strikes has damaged about 552,000 square meters of logistics capacity, roughly 10% of Wildberries' network in those assessments. Commander Robert Mahadyar-Brovdy's unit confirmed the operation, and OSINT footage showed large fires. The platform itself said operations at the affected hubs were temporarily suspended.
That physical damage compounds the liquidity story. When major retailers go offline, independent sellers lose revenue instantly. Regional supply chains stall and payrolls get hit, all of which feed consumer anxiety and, in some places, a frantic move to cash. The public social media reaction echoed that arithmetic. The posts around the footage were captioned. Several million people watched billions burn, which is blunt but useful shorthand for the visible scale of economic destruction. There's also a tactical argument from Kyiv's side. Ukrainian officials and analysts say some commercial platforms were being used to source dual-use parts and components tied to the war effort, so hitting logistics has both economic and strategic logic. That raises ethical trade-offs. Small sellers, workers at the hubs, and ordinary customers are collateral damage. You can see that in threads where commenters worry about livelihoods and civilian hardship, even while others praise the disruption of Russian logistics. The two stories, bank stress and strikes on logistics, start to form a feedback loop. Strikes increase economic uncertainty and physical shortages, which push people toward cash hoarding and squeeze bank liquidity. Strained banks make payments messier and raise the chance of rationing or targeted controls, which in turn worsen public confidence. Add in inflationary pressure, some reporting pegs Russia's monthly inflation around 10.6% in June, and you get a domestic economic squeeze that's costly politically and costly for the war effort. One consequence is practical. When refineries are hit, we're already seeing Russia pivot to imports of refined fuels, including purchases from India to plug domestic gaps. That change reshapes trade flows and creates new vulnerabilities in logistics and foreign exchange balance.
So what are the near-term policy levers and likely outcomes? The central bank can and is continuing to inject liquidity, and regulators could restrict cash withdrawals or impose selective controls to slow the drain. Governments can prioritize stabilizing critical supply chains and ensuring small sellers, but those steps are expensive and politically visible. Absent a quick restoration of confidence, the risk is a drawn-out period of financial fragility that eats into the state's fiscal bandwidth and raises the political cost of sustaining a long offensive. That's why analysts on Reddit stressed the same caution you'll hear from independent economists. The numbers now, the $2.099 trillion in repo lending, the $6.243 trillion in regulator debt. Troubled loans above 10% don't just sit on a spreadsheet, they map onto people's ability to get paid, shop, and travel. Keep an eye on three signals in the coming weeks. A. Whether cash growth stabilizes or accelerates. B. Whether interbank spreads compress back toward the policy rate or stay elevated. And C. Whether logistics disruptions continue to hit major commercial nodes. If those lines all worsen, the financial strain shifts from a technical problem into a political one.
If physical cash, burned warehouses, and squeezed banks are now part of the same story, the larger question is simple. Can Russia absorb the economic damage of sustained attacks without a domestic crisis that changes the political calculus? This is Alex Morgan from Debug the Hype.
Debug the Hype. Where the builders talk it through.